Demand. The beat is on demand. The beat is on demand.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Wide, wide world of sports.
Anytime, all the time. It's The Beat on demand on iTunes and WGNRadio.com.
Welcome in. This is The Beat on demand. My name is Adam Hoge, and very happy to put together our third episode of our on-demand editions. Of course, you can listen to our show on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, live on 720 WGN at 3 o'clock. And a frequent guest of ours on the program is John Moon Mullen, who's in studio here today for an on-demand episode. My cubicle mate at Hallis Hall. Hey, Moon.
It's weird to be talking to you face-to-face instead of having to turn around in our chairs.
Right, yeah.
Interrupting.
We have kind of a triangle between you, me, Zach Zaman. I guess we should throw Peggy Kaczynski in there.
Yeah, it's more of a trilogy of terror, but yeah.
Like that's a rhombus.
It's the fun part of the room, let's face it.
Exactly. Moon, of course, has been covering the Bears forever. What was your first year again? Was it
92.
92.
Yeah, Ditka's last year was my first, which was one of those, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into here? Yeah. That was... heck of a year to start.
Where does that year rank compared to, I guess we could even throw in last year, 2014, with Mark Trestman, in terms of the kind of the crazy years on the beat?
Yeah, I honestly would consider that 92 season more, I wouldn't say more aberrant. It was bizarre in so many different ways. You had, you know, the locker room and Mark Trestman and Phil Emery. There were so many things going on. In fact, we didn't even know all that were going on.
Right.
The thing about the first year with Mike Ditka is that it was just sort of like covering Mount Vesuvius. You know, you just had to make sure you're there for the eruptions, and I was there for a bunch of those. So that was it was so odd because that was the year when he had the blow up against Harbaugh. I've never seen a coach or something blow up that way. The great audible incident up in Minnesota, which then led to him after a bye week coming and then a reporter getting back in his face and then walking out in the press conference. And I'm sitting next to Dan Pompey, and we're thinking, oh my goodness, what are we sitting in here for? So yeah, it was more explosive. And then Mike stopped talking to the media on Monday. You could only get him on his radio show, and the team basically quit on him. And I think they lost their last six or whatever, or winning one game, but it was Mike Singletary's last game. So they said, well, we'll play hard for Samurai, but other than that, coach, we're done with you. And,
wow.
And then Bears were done with him.
So was that a season where, going into it, there was kind of talk about Ditka being fired already, or did it kind of just develop and unravel, sort of like with Mark Trestman last year, which was, I don't think any of us saw that coming going into the year, and certainly not Phil Emery also being let go as a general manager.
Yeah, I would completely agree, Adam. I think it's sort of, it can look so obvious in hindsight, but I don't know what everybody's predictions were, but remember after 8-8, I mean, they were 8-6 at the end of 2013, you know, lost the last two and almost beat the Packers even with the Chris Conte thing, and you thought, well, they're just going to motor on because they had so many injuries. They're going to motor up and on after that, and things just completely fell apart. It was different though because in 92 they were coming off so many playoff seasons. You know, they were still, even with Harbaugh, they still had, you know, McMichael and Dent and people like that were still around. So you thought, in fact, they were 11-5, I believe, in the two seasons before that in the playoffs. So yeah, it was. There were high expectations, or you certainly never thought it would completely explode like that. But I'm not sure the kind of blow up was so much different than last the Trestman's last year.
John Moon Mullen, of course, writing for CSNChicago.com, and of course you could see him on CSN Chicago all the time talking about the Bears. You've been there since 2009.
Yeah,
correct. And were you with the Herald the first year you were at? Or was that before?
Oh, good. Yeah, 92, the Daily Herald had a vacancy on the Bears beat. I was their business writer. Oh. I'd been at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange for a bunch of years and navigated a buyout there. I wanted to get back to writing. The Herald had a spot on the business staff, which I was coming out of business, so that was kind of natural. But 2.5 to 3 years into it, the Bears beat came open, and I really had never set out to be in sports. In fact, with the family, it's kind of nice to be, you know, semi 9 to 5.
Right.
So that opened up, and I kind of threw my hat in the ring. And to his credit, Doug Ray, the now I believe publisher at the Daily Herald, said, "Well, you know, Moon's got a little initiative, and he knows whether a football is inflated or stuff. Let's try him." So he was. They took a chance on me, which I really have always appreciated, kind of thinking outside of the box, and the Daily Herald was good enough to do that.
And how long were you on the Herald beat for the Bears before switching to the Trib?
5 years.
Okay.
92 was the first, and then summer of 97, the Tribune opened up, or had a spot, and so I joined Melissa Isaacson, and went there. Actually ended up doing some DePaul and some baseball. I kind of was an odd jobs guy, in addition to some of the heavy lifting on, let's say the Alonzo Spellman meltdown and all that kind of stuff that year. So it was an interesting first year at the Tribune, and then kind of all Bears after that.
Now, when I said hi to you when you walked in here today, it was, how's your off season? Oh, wait, what off season? Because there really isn't. Was it different back then? I mean, was there more of an off season back before? Mm-hmm. All these off season events today seem such a big deal. The combine, I don't think the draft was as big of a deal. Or maybe it was. You tell me.
Yeah, I think all of those things, to the NFL's credit, and let's face it, they've turned all of these things into events. So they're marketing their sport long after their season has ended. And the best example, the answer, the beat is much different. In one respect, it's 24/7, and our listeners are part of that because everybody wants to know something that happens as it happens. So
yeah.
You're kind of never off the clock. You're sort of always on screensaver. You know the feeling. You see something, a Bears word.
My wife hates it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really an odd.
Last night, Martellus Bennett tweets a cryptic. It wasn't even that cryptic, though, but he tweeted out a link to his movie thing that he did for children at mm-hmm. Hallis Hall with the Bears. And then the next tweet was separate, and it just said, "It's been fun," or whatever.
Right.
And of course, everyone just rolls with that. Gets retweeted everywhere. Oh, no, is Martellus Bennett been traded or released
exactly.
or whatever? Which, by the
great
way,
example.
You can't even trade him right now.
Yeah, great example of and Marty knows it, too. He's just kind of throwing a line in the water and kind of
he's messing around.
Playing
with
the fish.
Yeah.
But and that's a great example, Adam. That shows the difference, not only in the kind of the year-round news cycle, but the all-day news cycle. Somebody tweets something. Obviously, there wasn't Twitter. So you really, if something happened at 10 o'clock, and now the sports radio was just starting at that point when I came on, and that sort of started accelerated things because, the radio stations had people up at Hallis Hall, so there were, that was a live beat, as it were. But by and large, for the newspaper people, you really had until 9, 10 o'clock at night deadline if you had a page one kind of story. So the speed with which you had to react was different. You had to maybe do it, and I won't say a better job, but your stories had to be a little weightier, but you had all day to kind of work on them. Here you got all of, 12, 13 seconds after
right.
Martellus tweets something.
Yeah.
So, that part, the 24-hour news cycle and the immediacy of it, that's changed because people now, they're walking around with the newspaper in the form of their smartphones.
Yeah. So on that same subject, how has your job been different since you moved to the online venture of CSN Chicago mm-hmm. compared to being at the newspapers?
I was talking to somebody this morning about that, and we kind of agreed it's gotten harder and harder, and you can attest to this too, Adam. I mean, it's harder to break stories. About 95% of them come from the national guys
yeah.
who have a better networking with the agents and so forth, and the teams have clamped down a little more, have more and more gone to that. I mean, once upon a time, this predates me, but Don Pearson, the Hall of Famer for the Tribune, Don said, when he covered Abe Gibron type of people, they gave you your home phone. Call me. They mm-hmm. gave you the phone number. I mean, we'd have to explain if one of us ended up with John Fox's number, there'd be an investigation.
You're not kidding.
So, I mean, the league is in a different place in terms of rather than back in the Roselle-ish kind of time where you're trying to build your brand, build the thing. Now, a dog with a note in its mouth could sell the NFL. So they don't need us as much. Consequently, with all the outlets, the proliferation of outlets, agents aren't as responsive. They can only respond to so many people. And this came from one of the big dogs who's a personal friend. he said, Johnny, I can only return about five or six calls. And he said, I'm going to return the national guys because I'm going to get more splash for my thing. And nothing personal. But
right, Adam Schefter has like
bingo.
How many million Twitter followers?
Right. So right. Adam or Jay Glazer, I mean, those guys, you know, Ian Rappaport, guys who do great jobs. I mean, a lot of these guys were beat writers at one time. But the crush or the demand for news has put more demands on people's time. And the teams have, like we said, and you've been seeing that as well. I mean, the news clamp is getting tighter and tighter. Much more like a corporate situation. They don't want, there's a lot, we'll tell you when it's news.
Yeah.
And they don't want things flying out of the building without some control on it.
And two things I would say on a micro level have also impacted that just within, I think, each team. It's not just the Bears, it's every team. But with the popularity of the NFL, and also specifically, I guess, with the Bears in the city, I've noticed, and I'm going into year six on the beat, just in that time period, they don't need us.
Right.
You know, they don't need us like they used to. Especially with the Bears compared to other teams in this town,
mm-hmm.
the seats are still going to be filled.
Right.
And unfortunately, I find that part of it to be a little sad because it's almost like you're taking your fan base for granted a little bit. Now, it is the NFL, and mm-hmm. I think that's a league-wide thing, that they know that the TV ratings, most importantly, are still going to be there. Then the seats are going to be filled also. And then on the other side of it, there's the booming of each individual team website.
I think that's a huge
and
thing.
And the hiring of their own reporters mm-hmm. and their own TV people. And they're basically monopolizing the content.
They have access we don't.
Right.
And I won't say I don't begrudge. I wish we had that.
Yeah.
But, and we know Larry Mayer, good you know, colleague at the, does a wonderful job. And that's a great gig.
He does.
And you're really competing with you, I mean, the viewers and listeners only have so much time, so they have to pick an outlet. And I think the Bears had, and I wouldn't argue with this too much, you say, well, they don't get the free, it's not the free press, you're not getting the negative stories, or you're not getting the column, you're not getting the opinion pieces. And even, you know, taking this situation like that, I'm not sure how much people are craving that. Do
yeah.
people want more bad news? Hey, they can watch the Republican debates if they want that. So I don't. It's sort of you can't really argue with some of the premises. The team websites, it's a huge flow of information. Sometimes access. I mean, we all have access that each other doesn't have. But if I'm a viewer and I only have so much time on my smartphone or whatever, where am I going to go? So they're really competing with us. The public benefits, in one respect, is there are more outlets out there. You're not going to see breaking news necessarily on the Bears website, but you know that doesn't mean that Larry doesn't do a superb job with the news as it happens.
No, he does. But you're right. It's always going to be mostly one-sided towards mm-hmm. the, because it is still, to me, it's still more on the PR side of things than, you know, than the free press.
Well, you'll see, except, you know, I would argue, sometimes people will say, well, you don't hear enough good news stories. Well, if Larry does a piece on Alex Brown doing something in Africa or something, well,
yeah.
I guess that's a PR piece, but I think that's kind of a good story.
That stuff is certainly.
I mean, in a way, it's PR, but that's not stuff. And I think people sometimes like that stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of times like that stuff.
There was I think it was on the Bears website, there was Ryan Groy, who the Bears traded
the
before
New
the Island, season.
Right?
But he had a horrible tragedy in his family last winter with his, I think his dad died in a snowmobiling accident. And that's a guy who, you know, how far down is he on the depth chart? It's the middle of the off season. I don't think any of us knew that it happened.
Right.
But it showed up there on the Bears website because they had that kind of knowledge and connection
exactly.
to every player, because obviously, you know, something like that happens in your family, your employer mm-hmm. is going to know about it. So, yeah, there are some bright sides to that too, and some good stories that come out. Let's talk about some of the days in the 90s, because I'm fascinated mm-hmm. by the Wanstead era still. For me, that was I remember the end of the Dicka days. But it was really, I would say, the Wanstead years, just growing up in this city, where my memories of the Bears become a little bit more vivid.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like to cover those years?
boy, I mean, I felt fortunate to be there when Dave and his staff started because, you know, coming onto the beat with the Ditka staff, you know, guys like Dan Pompey, Fred Mitchell, the buddies who were your competitors, the relationships, I was huge catch up. I just dreaded opening the paper every morning and sometimes still do. But Dave, a lot of things changed, Adam. In fact, it really came from the top. Michael McCaskey really wanted to de-Ditka the Bears a bit. And you could really say, and a lot of people wouldn't be wrong, saying he probably wanted to do that as far back as 86 or 87. I mean, there were some funny bad blood stories between Michael and Mike. But when he brought Dave in, a lot of it was they started doing things the Dallas way, and that was the modern way. And you know, to their credit, they had gone after Wanstead. You know, you talk about the Bears being cheap. They weren't. They sometimes didn't spend their money in the right places, even internally. But they beat the Giants to Dave. So that was going to be a new era in Chicago football. And I think they were even 7-5 in that first year, 93, and then lost the last four. Then the next year they get into the playoffs, win a road playoff game. And I think we're at one point in the 95 season, we're 6-2. And, I mean, you thought you were kind of, well, this team's going somewhere. And then it was a game in Soldier Field. They lost to the Steelers in overtime. And then they lost five in a row. And that was when the thing kind of nosed over. They were still 9-7, but they lost out to the Lions on the last day. I think they got slaughtered by the 49ers, whatever. There was a last day. So even though they went 9-7, it was kind of like a lovey year. They had a good year but didn't make the playoffs. And then things started to fall apart at that point. But it was a rise. The roller coaster was going up, and then it kind of fell off the side. And that was the 90s, because then they had, you know, Eric Kramer's neck problem and then 2 4-12 seasons. And you know, to your big point, when the Bears do badly, though, the season ticket waiting list goes from 6 years to four.
Yeah.
Yes, you can only do so bad in Chicago with the Bears.
Yeah, eventually, that's what I mean by taking the fan base for granted sometimes. You still got to be careful with that. Are you surprised that Wani has become an analyst in this town? Because he did some work with Comcast this year.
Yeah, oh, I think Dave's terrific.
Yeah.
Dave always.
I like him.
Oh, yeah, a good man. He and his wife, Jan, are just delightful, good people. And I am delighted to see it, obviously, because he's doing some of it for Comcast, but he's got a sense of humor. See, that's the thing. You sort of know him as a head coach is through one filter. But if you can pull the camera back and see what kind of guy is he, and is this
well,
guy...
Well, he kept his family here, right?
Is that
correct? Yeah.
In fact, I think he was Joe Girardi's next-door neighbor up in Lake Flores at one point. But, yeah, he's stayed, has a connection in the area. I think they have a place in Florida, like... most coaches seem to.
Yeah.
But yeah, good, a really good guy. And it's nice to see him get recognized because, again, he was being so savaged. I mean, his first time head coach, which is kind of normal for the Bears up before John Fox. And he made a lot of mistakes, but also was the beneficiary of some really bad breaks. Literally, you know, Curtis Conway in a preseason game fractures his shoulder. I mean, there are things that really hurt him. And I don't know that he ever got really recognized because he could be such a funny – he was easy to make fun of. I mean, Dave, come on, he's got a leg.
Right.
You know, I got two, Dave. You know, come on. No, I don't know if surprised – you're surprised if only because you don't know who's going to emerge as that kind of a guy. But I personally am just delighted. And like I said, he does it for Comcast, and I think he's terrific. And I think he's got – I think I'm starting to see him even on some of the national shows.
Yeah,
he's
doing Fox Sports 1, I think, this year, some of their college football coverage, mm-hmm. which I enjoyed too.
So yeah, he's got great opinions, great stories. I think Dave is just starting to open up as a broadcasting flower. I think I'm not sure how many of his Tony Wise stories he can tell in public for public consumption, but there are some beauts.
Then we move on to the Dick Duran era, and I think there were a lot of personality comparisons between Dick and Mark Trestman. How mm-hmm. much of that was fair, though? Because you worked closely mm-hmm. with both of them.
Fair. Certain things were they were both very earnest, both extremely bright. Maybe two of the brightest people. I mean, I think Dick might be a master's in history. I mean, he's a really, and Mark's a law degree. Not that education is necessarily a sign of intelligence, but they both had that. They also didn't have that swagger kind of persona that a lot of the players would almost could relate better to. Cerebral and almost to a fault. They weren't great. They weren't grab the flag, follow me kind of guys. Now, not that you have to be loud when you do that, but you've been around Mark and, you know, and Dick. Players loved the guy, you know, just not because he was easy, but they knew he knew the game. He'd played it, and he was good, but just not one of those guys who's cut out to be a head coach. And you could obviously say the same about Mark.
Yeah, I think in those ways there are a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Which one did both have trouble commanding the locker room, or is that more on Mark's side than Dick?
I did not see any of that.
Okay.
Like Olin Kreutz once said, he coined it. He said, the one thing you did not want to get from Dick was the look. And it would be a way of, you had to understand Dick was not somebody, he was really, to a player, great. He would never trash people in public. So you almost had to learn how to read what he was saying. Almost like the language of diplomacy. You know, when the Russians say, well, we're concerned about the situation in wherever, that means they're fueling the bombers. You know, so you had the nuances. So, but Olin said the worst thing you could hear from Dick was, you know, Olin, you know, we need more out of you. And he said, oh, my God, I'm going to get cut. You know, it's sort of, but he conveyed, he was so genuine. Again, I don't know how good a coach he was or, and he had Gary Croton and then John Shoup as his own coordinators.
Right.
Boy, how often are we seeing coaches run afoul or run up on the rocks because of their offensive situations in Chicago?
And I was just about to get into Lovie Smith. It's amazing hiring offensive coordinators in this town has been a problem forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally got a pretty good one this year, and he immediately gets hired away as a head coach. And then I found that fascinating as I did the research that Adam Gase was the first assistant hired away to be a head coach by another NFL team since Buddy Ryan.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I would have thought there would have been somebody else in there somewhere.
I thought so too. And then I was going through, I was talking to Mike Corbo, one of the Bears PR guys, and we were trying to just go through it and see if there was anybody. Yeah. I think there's some that maybe...
To be directly head coach.
Yeah, like Ron Rivera.
Ron Rivera, Dave McGinnis.
Right. But, yeah, but not hired directly from the Bears.
Right.
You know, in a situation where you're essentially losing one of your top assistants to another team. That had not happened since Buddy Ryan.
And amazing to think about the ones... Well, and maybe this is a reflection. Maybe this is a real testament to Adam Gase. One of the reasons that happens, you become a hot coordinator when your team wins.
Yeah,
their Bears haven't had a consistently winning or playoff level offense and or defense too often. But I think the fact that Adam was still a hot commodity, well, I think if you make something out of Jay Cutler, which he certainly did this year, again, not to take credit away from Jay, because you can tell somebody something, but only if they're finally willing to listen, they get some of the credit too. But no, I think the amazing thing, right, Adam gets, he's a hot guy off of a 6-10 team, which, yeah, good for him.
Well, I think you give the Dolphins credit for, and it shouldn't just be the Dolphins, because there's obviously a lot of teams that wanted his services, but a lot of people there were able to realize the job that he really did this year with all the injuries they had.
Yeah,
the fact he got Jay to another level after by far his most disastrous season a year ago. The pros, it was an impressive job, and then you add in what he did in Denver, and it was a pretty easy move, I think.
You know, it's funny, and I'm just checking into something, Adam, which you love factoids, same as I do.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a cool fact. This past year was the first year in franchise history the Bears had 8 different receivers with 20 or more catches. And you say, well, that's good. Wow, they really spread the ball around. No, it just means a lot of guys were hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, 20 is not a huge amount of production. They've had 7 a bunch of other times. But this is the first time that 8 guys, I mean, Mark Mariani, like Josh Bellamy.
Josh Bellamy, I think, got up there. Yeah.
This is, not again, kudos for them. But you'd really rather have about five or six and have them all be your bell cows.
Right. Because as we mentioned those names, guys like Marquise Wilson didn't have as many as he was supposed to have. Eddie Royal didn't have as many as he was supposed to have. So that's why.
Yeah, that's the bad news. Yeah. He had eight guys. The good news is he had eight different receivers. The bad news, he had eight different receivers with 20.
Right. There's always a catch. Just like when Brandon Marshall was catching 98% of the passes, then that was a problem.
You know, it's funny because I said when he came that 2012 season, I remember I got lanced for this. No, not lanced, brigged for that. But I said if he catches 100 balls, the Bears are only going to play 16 games. Because no team, I think only once in history had a team with a 100-catch receiver won a Super Bowl. And it was the Patriots with, I think, Troy Brown.
Wow, that's the only time. That's interesting.
Very, very interesting. And another one is for the longest time, no team had won the NFL, won the Super Bowl or an NFL Super Bowl with the league's leading rusher. Which was very odd. I thought, well, one or the other you'd win with, but apparently it's whatnot. You can look back. I mean, obviously there were people, Emmitt Smith. I mean, some of that changed, but for the longest time, it's almost as if your offense was too based on one guy like Chicago's and Walter. You just didn't necessarily win.
Well, and like Matt Forte catching over 100 passes two seasons ago. Someone I remember getting into some kind of Twitter argument with somebody over Matt Forte this year, and he said, "Well, look how much is." His pass production, his receiving production dropped this year. And I'm like, that was a good thing. He went from a ridiculous 100 catches that no offense should really have a running back catching the football that much. That means that there's other problems. And it probably means they're not running the ball enough. Were you surprised, though, that Matt Forte was, I don't want to say not brought back, but maybe the timing of it? That it happened so soon that it just was, they didn't even get really close to free agency before Ryan Pace said, "Hey, look, we're just not going to bring you back."
It tells me that I'm not sure either of us or any of us would be really surprised that Matt isn't a Bear in 2016. The timing of it was a little surprising only because it was done early, and yet. Knowing how the Bears are internally, I give them some credit. You know what? Let's make it known. We'll let you are now going to be free. So it's almost like cutting a player sooner rather than later, giving him a chance to catch on. Well, what they've done is say we are not going to be bidding. You know, they took themselves out of the bidding. Now, obviously, it might have hurt Matt a little bit because now that's one less team that's going to be in the market for him.
Yeah.
But I think clearly what happened. The Bears and GM Ryan Pace, they know what Matt was going to be looking for. You know, probably a Frank Gore kind of money, which guaranteed $6.5 million. They weren't going to pay anything close to that. So rather than get into a bidding contest and then have to drop out, Matt, we're not near where you want to go. So,
well, and this was a point I did make over the weekend on the beat in our live shows. Which is, we don't really know what kind of conversations have happened over the last month or so. Because the Bears have had exclusive negotiating rights. They could have announced an extension the other day.
They could have announced it back when Matt went to them back in before last season.
So the point is that we don't know what kind of discussions have already happened between them, how much Matt Forte is looking for. And also, this is something that you know very well and I know. Even though the agents aren't allowed to talk to teams until March 7th, 2 days before the new league year when they can technically sign contracts. These conversations happen. They happen at the Senior Bowl. They happen. So while maybe, we're not at the point where there's a big, huge bidding war, Ryan Pace has a good idea what Matt Forte is going to command on the open market.
Yeah.
That's what he gets paid to know. And so it's really easy for us or fans to come out and say, "Oh, well, Matt wasn't really asking for that much money." You know, he would have taken a fair deal with the Bears to retire with the Bears, but we don't know what that exact dollar amount is and where that is in line with what Ryan Pace wants to be spending on 30-year-old running backs, no matter who they are.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting to hear some of the patter about, well, the Bears have a lot of salary cap space. Yeah, but you have a lot of things you want to do with that. And more important, that does not mean, you know, just because you've got a lot of money in your checking account doesn't say you run out, "Oh, I'm going to overspend for a coat." You know, you're still shopping. You want to get value or the right price for something. If Matt had hit the market, you would really have been paying him based on what somebody else thought he was worth. You either match that or you don't get him. So, again, that's just the nature of the free market, with the free market economy, which the NFL is, other than franchise tagging. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Adam. You know that Ryan Pace and his staff, they know what the market's going to be. And they probably, I'm sure they had those conversations with Disa Bakari, his agent. So knowing what it's going to be, we don't want to have a repeat of the Brian Urlacher thing where we actually did get into some bidding and then all of a sudden it blows up. Even though they offered him a $2 million deal with a mil guaranteed, and you may not have wanted him back, but I go back, not to rehash that old thing. It's unusual to offer a guy $1 million if you don't want him at all.
Right.
So, again, that's another old story.
And especially when he didn't end up anywhere else.
Well, yeah. Why should they bid against themselves? I mean, again, I did not think that was one of Phil Emery's mistakes. Now, whether he handled it right in the conversation is something else.
Right. But I think the issue was that when Brian came back and said no, at least if you listen to Brian's side of it, they sent out immediate release and said goodbye before he even really knew it was happening.
Yeah.
And that's probably not the best way to handle one of your all-time greats.
Yeah, and I think what kind of rubbed Brian the wrong way was, they offered this. He came back, came off of his, went 2 years at 11, for 11 mil or whatever. And they said no when he was expecting a counteroffer. But yeah. In any negotiation, there is a point at which you say, nope, that's our offer. Now, it may come on the first day, and if you walk in and the player says, give me your best offer, and you say, well, there is $2 million. Okay, well, let's start talking. No. You asked me for – that's my best offer. Now, again, we weren't in those discussions, and maybe it wasn't handled with enough respect for who Brian was or whatever. But, I didn't sense any – I don't think there's any hard feelings in this whole situation, the Matt Forte thing. So letting Matt get to the market with a some gesture of respect. And obviously it was Matt who told everybody, put it out there, not the Bears. So, I think this was handled probably as well as it could be. I'm still surprised, though, that there wasn't some sort of thing, because what coach doesn't want a dependable veteran over a young guy? Everybody does.
Yeah.
And Fox wants to win now. Matt is a win now kind of player. So my guess, as you were just saying, I think obviously the market was not going to be one the Bears really wanted to dip their toe in.
Yeah, and Matt Forte is probably right up there with Doug Martin in terms of available running backs out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might side with Doug because he's a little bit younger. But he's going to get paid, and he's probably going to end up in a pretty good situation. Yep. Before we get out of here, we got to ask you where the nickname Moon came from.
Oh, boy, the third day on the Bears beat. It comes from the cartoon strip Moon Mullins.
Okay.
So it's, which is, believe it or not, older than I am. Brian Harlan, who was the Bears PR guy, I walked up the stairs of the old Hallis Hall. Hey, Moon. I was like, what? My dad actually had been Moon before me, although obviously Brian didn't know him, but that's where it came from. It was hung on me by the Bears media relations head at the time, and it comes from the cartoon strip. And I think I know there were players who came and went who never knew my real name. The guy with the beard. Oh, you mean Moon. John Mullen. Who? Oh, you mean Moon. It's like, I think that was, I still remember I shot pool with a couple guys, and I think one guy was stunned to hear what my real name was. I thought you were just Moon.
Well, you are. You're just Moon.
Whatever.
Well, it's a great nickname. So 92, what is it, 26? That's 24 years? Right? Is my math correct?
Yeah, this will be. And there was one, I went off it for a little bit. I did more baseball and some Northwestern stuff for a year when David Hall got, and David kind of got up to speed. Then I went back on in 95 with him, or with Casey Johnson, and then with David in 96 and so forth. So, it's been an interesting time. Not one of those things I ever set out to do. This is a midlife career correction.
Well, I feel like I'm asking this to like a Jermon Bushrod or something, but I mean, have you thought about how many years left you have on the beat?
The bad thing is that Comcast has a television. If it were just radio, I'd be better off. They can see me. Oh my God, look at him! I think as long as I feel I can do it a good enough job, you don't want to feel like you're hanging on,
right?
I thought about we. I'm 68, you think, well, when you want to retire, well, my finance guy said, well, you probably could, but then you'd look around for something interesting and fun to do, and you're already doing that.
Yeah, if you love what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, we get to cover a game, and it's, I enjoy the people that do it. You know, I think we can, you know, there's always, people can vilify athletes and so forth, but I don't think, I don't know how you feel, I don't think they have a locker room full of jerks.
No, I don't. I don't.
No,
right,
and it's been, I mean, there have been better and worse teams.
There might be one or two here and there, but it's certainly not enough to ruin your day.
Right. I
think especially if you come with the right attitude every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more jerks in the press room than there are in the locker room. No, I didn't say that, guys. But no, that's, I think how long is really, how long it works for Comcast, and it's still fun for me to do. I mean, and here's the, maybe the biggest last point is, I haven't done this my whole, I mean, this is, I was 45 when I started covering the Bears. And so I'm not burned out at this point. I mean, sometimes there were frustrating years, but we all, I've done other jobs. This is a really good one. And if you don't have a bad day at work, whether it's sales, you know, I was at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange for years. Oh, my goodness. I came home more days with a headache than I can count. But it's just fun. I mean, we're covering a fun. I so enjoy the sport. Played a little bit of that, and I really enjoy the game itself. So that actually adds to it. And you appreciate, as you do, you know, what these guys do to be professional. And I would say this about anybody, whether it's mm-hmm. sports, sales, whatever job. There's something to being around really, really top professionals, and we get a chance to do that every day.
Well, we certainly don't want you to go anywhere. I don't. I enjoy talking to you at Hal's Hall every
always
day,
fun.
And I always love having you on the program. One of the best Bears
My
guys
pleasure.
To talk to.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks, Adam.
A lot of fun. All right, that's John Moon Mullen. Again, read his work, csnchicago.com. He's got something new almost every day, and of course during the season, certainly every day, multiple, what are you, like five things a day during the season.
Oh, my God,
and keep
yeah.
you posting a lot.
We're just feeding the beast every day, aren't we?
That's right. John Moon Mullen, thanks so much. And again, you can hear The Beat live on Saturdays and Sundays at 3 o'clock, and of course follow subscribe on iTunes, and you can get all of our shows, both the live weekend shows as well as these on-demand episodes, which we enjoy doing. For John Moon Mullen, I'm Adam Hogue. I'll talk to you this weekend on The Beat.
This has been The Beat on Demand. Listen to The Beat on the air Saturdays and Sundays at 3 p.m. on 720 WGN.